November 1st, 2007. It's the Lolabot Podcast. Lolabot Podcast. Hi, it's Jeff Robbins, back with episode 49 of the Lolabot Podcast. We do them almost every week, and we're inching up on 50. It should be. I don't know. We'll have to do something special for episode 50. We haven't figured out what yet, but if anyone has any ideas, send us an email or call 877 Lolabot and leave us a message, and we'll come up with something. But this week we have an interview with Chad Phillips, who's a longtime Drupal developer. And he's done a lot of core work and a whole bunch of contrib stuff. He's done a bunch of work recently with Asterisk and sort of integrating Drupal with telephone technology stuff. We'll talk a bit about that and how that works. And also, he's done some really great stuff along with Derek Wright with the project module, which is sort of the module that kind of powers Drupal.org, especially around the projects, the modules and themes and development that goes on there. So we'll talk to him about that. Next week's workshops in Providence, Rhode Island are sold out. We've got a whole bunch of people, and it's going to be a good time. We'll be announcing more workshops for early next year. We'll be announcing in the next couple of weeks. And if you get on the mailing list, go to lolabot.com and sign up for the mailing list. We will send you an email and let you know when those get announced. But we sold out, so we're excited about that. Should be a good time. And next episode will be episode 50, something special. We don't know what. In the meantime, Chad Phillips, welcome to the podcast.
It's nice to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have you been involved with Drupal? And
I was just thinking about that the other day, and in my head, I was like, it has to have been 4 years. So, of course, the easiest way to find that number is to go to your My Account page on Drupal.org and look, right? And it's been about 2.5 years, so I feel like I've been in a time warp because I feel like it's been much longer, but it looks like it's been about 2.5 years, maybe just a hair longer than that.
Yeah.
But, I just feel like I've done so much in that time.
I know. Yeah. I guess it feels longer when you get involved deeper.
It's true. So I was going to say, some of the first work I did was with you on some of those old time modules that are still kicking, like sign up and plugin.
I should look at my account and find out when I got started, because it also feels like a long time for me, but I bet it's only been about 2.5, maybe 3 years, something for me. Yeah. So what do you do for a living, and do you use Drupal for work, or do you work as a,
That's actually a really interesting question. And the funniest thing to me was that I originally got involved in Drupal not because I was using it, but more because I actually started out programming in Access VBA, which is Visual Basic for Applications. It was on Microsoft stuff. And I literally worked in a cave for like a year and a half, just working away, no idea if what I was doing made any sense from a programmer's perspective. And at some point I thought, you know, I might want to actually look at some other people's code and see if I'm doing things right. And actually at that time I was also involved with working for an artist named Stuart Davis, who I'm sure you know. Mm-hmm. And another gentleman by the name of Matt Westgate was also working with Stuart, and he had talked many times about Drupal. That was what Stuart's site was running. So I thought, hey, that sounds like a cool thing to check out, and I would love to get involved in a community of programmers just so that I can hone my skills. So that was how I got started. And for the longest time, all I had running was just a crappy band site, and I was doing all this work and putting all this time in just because the community is so cool, you know, and I was learning so much. So it was only recently that I actually started using it for my business, and I ported it over, wrote a big module for myself that basically lets us run our entire business off of a Drupal website. So now I can go to any computer that has an internet connection and log in and run my business, which is really, really nice.
So what is your business?
I sell answering services to apartment complexes all across the country, and it's the kind of business that's really boring to talk about, but it's a nice little business model. And my particular role in the business is very technical, so I don't do as much dealing with the customers as I do like the back office tech troll guy, you know, writing the programs and making sure everything works all right. And that and Asterisk is actually one of the things that's beginning to tie into that. So
right.
Yeah.
So you basically got involved with Drupal for fun, and
I did.
It hasn't been
and for the community too.
Right. So, and it hasn't been your main source of income.
No. And I have done projects here and there. I mean, I think even you and I worked on a couple projects.
Yeah.
Here and there, but they were always, you know, that was nice. And you, I always said I the money that I made in Drupal was always spent solely on going to Drupal conferences. It was like, I make just enough so that I can fly to Europe and then see everybody.
that's a funny model. But so your business is, answering services for basically for apartment complex kinds of things.
Right.
So
it's a very niche. Yeah.
People's toilet is overflowing. They can call and get in touch with someone. Right.
Yeah. So the toilet overflows on the weekend and they're, oh my God. And they call the office. Well, of course, nobody's there. So they get put over to our service and our people will handle it. So it's pretty simple, straightforward, but it's a nice little niche market that's been really good to us.
Right. So this segues pretty well into one of your sort of interests and projects with Drupal, which has been Asterisk integration and the Asterisk server in general. Do you want to explain to people a little bit what exactly Asterisk is?
Sure. And before we go diving headfirst into Asterisk, this is what I'll call the disclaimer section, which is that I am far from an Asterisk expert. I've spent enough time to learn enough about Asterisk to integrate it with Drupal in some pretty cool ways, but I certainly don't know it inside and out. So if I say anything that is wrong, it would be great if somebody could post a note to the comments of the podcast or whatever just to correct things. So that being said, I'll do my best to describe Asterisk. Basically, for anybody that hasn't heard of Asterisk, it's a software PBX which was designed to run on Linux but also runs on some other systems nowadays. And basically what that means is it's a phone switching system inside your computer. So, and it does all the kind of things that you would normally think a phone switching system would do, like you have different extensions that go to different people, or you can have a voicemail system, or you can have an IVR, like press 1 to, you know, to learn more about whatever. So it does those kind of things. It's really very robust in the sense that it handles most different kinds of VoIP or analog interfaces. Like pretty much anything that has to deal with a telephone, you can find a way to plug it into Asterisk and make it work. Landline phones, soft phones, you know, different switches and stuff. And the base install of Asterisk pretty much comes with most of the standard things you would think a switching system would, like voicemail and different extensions for phones and such.
Yeah, I've messed with it a little bit, but mostly, I mean, I think mostly we're starting to see the effects of Asterisk rather than seeing it directly. There's a lot of like these free conference call type systems that are out there, or really cheap voicemail kinds of systems that'll, you know, forward you off to various places and stuff like that.
Right.
And all of that is sort of the result of this sort of free, robust telephony kind of system.
Right. I think the same thing. And just to be clear, there actually are other open source solutions besides Asterisk, but my understanding anyways is that Asterisk was first, and it's kind of the granddaddy and kind of the most mature. And it does a lot of stuff because of that.
Right.
So.
And there's been some work that various people over time have done integrating Drupal and Asterisk to do some pretty crazy things.
Yep.
What have you seen done with it, and what have you done with it?
Well, the majority of my work has just been taking the existing Asterisk module, which was written by Herman Webley, and Herman ended up going off to school and kind of fell out of the Drupal community. And I, at that point, I was just getting really interested in Asterisk, so I said, "Hey, do you mind if I take over the module?" And he said, "Sure." So I took a hold of it, and it was in its 4.6 state then, and I rewrote it all, pretty much up from top to bottom to do some things in a much more dynamic way. And what it can do currently, actually, I would probably need to, I don't know if I can do it off the top of my head. Let me go to the web page here and look at the features. Yeah, so at this point, it works really well on Drupal 5 right now, but I would still consider it very beta because there's a lot of things about it that I'm going to change. But at this time, some of the things you can do are you can call yourself to play a demo. So from a website that has the Asterisk module installed, and if it's connected to an Asterisk server that has Drupal support, you can click on a link and it will call your phone and play you like a little demo message. Or you can call another user. So if you and that other user have an account on this Asterisk enabled site and you both have your phone numbers entered, you can go to their account and click call user, and it will call them or call you, then call them, and then bridge the call so the two of you can talk. And then one of the really, to me, the most fun thing, the thing that is what I think is when I demo it, is the real wow factor, is where you can have Asterisk call you from the website and record a message, and then as soon as you hang up the phone, it gets posted to the website. So it literally, you can do, with what we have now, you can do something along the lines of an audio blog.
Oh, but where it calls you, though.
It calls you, there's actually another module, and I haven't played with it at all, but I know the guy's using Asterisk. I think it's called Phone Blogs, and he's got it set up in the reverse direction, where you get an 800 number or something, and then you enter a code, and then, you know, you initiate the contact. With my setup, which in a certain circumstances is less optimal, but I did it just as an experiment, you are going to the website and click, you know, you're typing in the name of the file and clicking a button, and then it ends up calling you.
Right, right.
So both have their uses, but it's just, to me, the whole idea of audio blogging is just pretty neat, that you can be out and about and you just talk on your cell phone, and as soon as you hang up, wham, it's on the website.
Right.
You know, that's the kind of, this is probably a good point to emphasize, like, that's the thing that makes Asterisk so special, is that unlike a regular phone, phone switch that you might buy from, I don't know, like Avaya or whatever, which can do a lot of the things that Asterisk can do, you can't get into it from the outside very much, or you can't have it talk to outside systems in the same way that Asterisk can. Asterisk has what's called the Asterisk Gateway Interface, which is basically a very low-level way of talking to all kinds of outside systems, and that's where the Drupal module, the Asterisk Drupal module, ties in, is that it uses that Asterisk Gateway Interface to communicate with the Asterisk server on a very low level to say, hey, here comes a call, and the Asterisk server says, hey, here's the message in, you know, Drupal site, and you can upload it and put it where you want, and things like that. So that particular functionality, I think, is what really opens up. That's what really makes people's eyes go wide, because they're like, holy crow, pretty much anything you can think of that you can do with a website, you can get your phone involved in it, because you can talk to Asterisk directly.
Right, right. Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, the idea, when you start thinking of calls as Drupal nodes and stuff like that, it starts to get kind of crazy kind of fast. I mean,
yep.
And I know I saw a demo. There was a guy, Leo Bird, I think is his name, at the MIT Media Lab, was doing a bunch of work with Drupal and Asterisk. And I think he was doing sort of the reverse stuff, where you could just call in from any phone and it would create a node on the website. But then there was also a system where you could call in from another, you know, another person could call in and they could listen to the existing, you know, content nodes, what Drupal would be, you know, would refer to as nodes.
Right. And my module actually does that as well. I forgot to mention that, where you can, after you post something, you can click on a link and it'll call you on your phone to play it. So
right
there,
right,
we have some similar functionality. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I noticed it's interesting I've been involved with managing and working on that module for a while. And the pattern that I keep seeing is the people will I get a lot of people that going to my little demo site which has had zero kind of, like, you know, this is by far, if we end up talking about that site or giving the address, that will be by far the most marketing it's ever had. And I still get people coming to it, like, you know, once every other day I'll get an email and they're all excited. And then I'd show them the demo and they're very impressed, and then nothing happens. I'm not sure why that is. It's like there's this big, like, woo, it's the greatest thing in the world, and then nobody takes another step. So I've kind of been carrying the ball myself, at least on the Asterisk module for a while. I'm hoping that at some point somebody will see it and it'll kind of stick, you know, and then I'll have a
Asterisk is a little bit difficult to get set up, and a lot of the paradigms are new. To a lot of people. I mean, the idea of like, okay, cool, my computer is going to call out, make a phone call, but not use its modem. How does it connect to the telephone system and all that kind of stuff is sort of like, confusing for people. At least my experience was, I think I might have gotten Asterisk installed on my system, but it doesn't have a user interface or anything for me to know. Right.
The base install is just a command line interface, and you definitely need to know what you're doing. And the configuration can be really frustrating too. And actually, before I forget, because I really wanted to mention this, and this is something we should probably post on the show notes, is that if you're interested in trying Asterisk and you want to skip over a lot of the scary, confusing, and frustrating parts of getting an Asterisk system up and running, is to download an open source package called TrixBox. Mm-hmm. And that's just spelled TrixBox. And I think it's TrixBox.org, but let me check that real quick and just see. But the really cool thing about TrixBox is that it's using all open source software. I think it uses CentOS for the operating system, and it has all kinds of TrixBox.com. So TrixBox.com. That's where you go to find that. And what it is, it's a complete package to get Asterisk up and running, and I haven't installed it.
Including an
operating system. So the way you do it is, now the upside is it does pretty much everything for you, and when it's done, you have a fully functional Asterisk system with a certain type of GUI that's actually pretty easy to use to start doing things like adding phone extensions and stuff. So that's the great part about it. The slight downside is that it's able to do that because it takes over an entire machine. So basically, you download the install thing, you burn it onto CD, you pop it into the computer, and it wipes that computer clean and installs a fully functional TrixBox Asterisk system on your computer. So if you have a cheap old computer sitting around and you want to kind of get Asterisk up and running the easy way, this is a great, great way to do it.
Huh.
Because it will install all kinds of neat stuff. It'll install Asterisk, it installs I forget what it's called, but it's sort of a monitoring or workload system. It installs a GUI for it called, I think it's called FreePBX, which is basically a GUI, I think it's PHP-based GUI for Asterisk, where instead of having to go in and like mess around with the configuration files by hand, it'll take you through the GUI and it'll walk you through everything, and then when you hit save, it goes and writes the files for you. So it's really, really easy. And even if you were going to build your own system after that, I think it would be a good idea to just start there. And you could kind of model what it does for your own thing and make some adjustments. It would really save you a lot of time, because this is people that have had years of experience in Asterisk that have kind of put something together already. So you're going to get to learn from their experience by just installing it and playing around with it.
Cool. In order to make outgoing phone calls or something, you need to set up with a service or something?
Well, it depends. Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. And it depends on how you want the phone calls to go in and out. Now, if you are going to go the traditional, just plug in a phone line to it, then you do need to have an additional card. And the company that sells the main card that I've seen anyways is Digium. They're the ones that actually sponsor Asterisk. And I think that's spelled D-I-G-I-U-M. Yes. So Digium.com. If you were interested in going the more traditional POTS route, where you wanted an analog phone line or even a digital phone line like a T1, they sell interface cards that you can plug into your computer. And that's another really cool thing about TrixBox, is that if you put that card in before you install it, it recognizes the card, installs all the drivers, sets it all up for you. You know, it's all done for you. Now, if you don't want to go that route and you just want to stick to VoIP, you really don't need any kind of additional hardware at all. Asterisk comes fully VoIP functional right as it's installed. But if you're going to connect to the real telephone world in that's where you have to kind of get yourself signed up with a provider. So you sign up with a provider and you get an account and put in your username and password, and then if you're going to make any phone calls out to a real phone, they'll provide the gateway to get to and from that phone. Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay. I'll hit rewind and listen to it again. If that makes sense.
but basically, there's three different ways you can go. It might be an easier way to say it. You can go, you're going to provide the analog service directly from your computer, in which case you need a card. That's one way. The second way is all VoIP. You don't talk to any POTS stuff at all. In that case, you're going to be able to say, I have Asterisk call like a soft phone that's on somebody's computer, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't need any kind of gateway. You don't need any other help for that either, because Asterisk can do that directly. Or you want to do VoIP, but you want to be able to connect to another phone. In that case, you need somebody's help.
Right.
So if that makes sense.
Yeah. Wow. It's cool. I mean, it's cool to think that you start to have that power to connect that way, because I think a lot of people, you know, sort of the to some extent, the future beyond this web 2.0 thing that people are talking about is starting to step outside of the web. You see even services sort of like Jaiku and Twitter and stuff that are starting to do a lot more, you know, SMS focused stuff, kind of bring it, the web that you bring with you, and start to sort of blur the edges of what is the web, or even something like the iPhone or something. And so, this Asterisk stuff and just the how cheap, telephony technologies have gotten are starting to sort of change.
And I think it's only going to go more in that direction. You know, it just keeps getting cheaper and cheaper. I was doing some research a little while back, and you can do 800 VoIP service, and it's really not expensive at all, like less than 2 cents a minute for an 800 number, which is crazy cheap. I mean, I don't know if you ever priced 800 numbers, but that's pretty cheap.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I mean, again, you start to get into international calling and all that kind of stuff. There's all sorts of really interesting.
And I haven't played with it at all, but there's a networked, I'm not exactly sure how to describe, but it's sort of a way to connect Astro servers together across the internet called Dundee. And basically the idea is that if it was set up well and enough people did it, that you could literally, like, your Asterisk box was set up with this Dundee system, and you go to place a call in from, you know, you're in Cleveland, you go to place a call to Seattle, right? Well, your Asterisk server goes out and finds another Dundee-enabled server in Seattle and says, hey, I want to connect this call, and you know, that server has a local connection, so it just handles it all for you, and you're just going through the routing system that takes from, so it's a peer-to-peer network basically is what it is for Asterisk.
Right. And if someone's set up in Bali, it's the same thing. You know, you get a local phone call to Bali, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So the possibilities are just absolutely crazy what you can do with that.
Cool. And you've also done some SMS work as well. I mean,
a little bit. Yeah.
Segue into that a little bit.
Sure.
So what type of SMS work have you done? This is another area I think that's also sort of booming. I mean, there's a number of different ways to do that. Usually you sign up with a SMS gateway service.
But
there's also some ways of doing it more directly as well, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's more the approach that I've taken. I have been doing some work for a company called Denver Open Media. Here in Denver, they do the public access TV channels. And they are really interested in being able to collect voting for their shows. So say somebody's sitting at home and they're watching whatever show on one of their public access channels. They want the person to be able to pick up their cell phone and cast a vote for that show so that they can start getting some idea of which shows are actually more popular, then they can base their scheduling around that, et cetera. But the tricky part is, you know, nobody really knows how much of a success that kind of a system is going to be in the beginning.
Right.
And I don't know, you probably actually have looked into the idea of sending and receiving SMS and the short codes and stuff. And the receiving part of SMS, like if you need to buy a short code, is another one of those things that's just crazy expensive.
Yeah.
You know, if you're just going like, hey, I just want to try this out and see if it's going to work, and you're going to pay like $1,100 a month to try that,
right.
You know? So it's a little bit on the pricey side. So what I started to do was I just played around with the idea of, well, what other ways can we get and send and receive SMS messages to cell phones. And one of the things that all the major providers in the U.S. have is what's called an SMS to email or email to SMS gateway. And basically what that means is that if you're on your phone and you send a text message to an email address, then your provider will actually turn that SMS message into an email and email it to the person, and vice versa. Your cell phone has its own special email address, and if somebody sends an email to that special email address, it gets turned into an SMS message and sent to your phone. So once I became really aware that that was a two-way system that was available, I thought, well, that's kind of an interesting thing to explore to try to get some two-way communication going there and kind of sidestep the whole the vendor lockout or whatever you want to call that, you know, the kind of the black box that they have going on with the regular SMS messaging. So I've played with that some, and that code, again, or that stuff that I've done has not been heavily it hasn't been implemented in any heavy way, but I've used it. I've tested it on all the major networks in the continental United States, and it works really, really, really well. Like, I have a little application set up on a test site where you go to the Drupal site and you'll enter somebody's SMS email address, and it'll pop up a little chat window, and you can type in a message and hit return, and it sends them an SMS message, which they can then type in text and hit reply without having to know anything about where it's going, and that will come back into the Drupal site and pop up into your chat screen. So it's literally two-way chat from your Drupal website with somebody who is on their cell phone.
That's really cool.
It is really cool. Yeah, I actually just demoed that for some folks the other day, and they were really happy with it. So it has some limitations. When I was in Barcelona, we had a little SMS get together, and there were people there talking about several different approaches. Like mine was one approach where I'm doing all the email gateway, and then there was another guy there that was using a provider. I think he was using Clickatel as the provider to do like more traditional SMS message sending. And we kind of were all putting our heads together and talking about what was working and what wasn't working. And one of the things I learned is that especially the sending of SMS messages through an email gateway. Like, I want to send an SMS message to somebody's email, phone email address, basically. It just doesn't work in Europe because they have things set up differently, and they just totally shut that down. So a two-way communication using my system over there just isn't going to work. But a two-way communication in the continental U.S. seems to work really well. So, and that's one of the things about SMS that's a bit dicey, because it's still kind of an evolving, like, you're not quite, there's no one rule set that you can just go, here's how I'm going to do it, and that's going to work out great for all situations.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, it does get a little bit tricky. But one of the things I really like about what I've done is that as far as the receiving messages, it works really, really well. And unless the provider is going to shut you down because you're doing too many receiving messages, which I have no idea how that would work, it works really well.
Right.
When you reply to whatever message I send out, it just comes into my email server, and that gets into a little script, and that sends it to the Drupal site, and everything just works out really, really well. And then the other nice thing is that you can put metadata into the email address. If you're clever about it, you can slip some metadata into the email address, so you actually have some like intelligence about how you're going to route that reply that's coming back.
Would that work? You like as the user's name or something?
For example,
I see what you mean by right, using sort of a catch-all email address.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, to be technical about it, that you can set up like a mail server like PostFix, you can set that up so that you can receive email addresses. And you just kind of have like a regular expression in there that says, if it starts with say SMS and it has anything and then this domain name, I want you to forward it to this local address.
Okay.
So, and what I'll do is I have that kind of set up, and then I'll just use address extensions. So it'll say SMS plus and then my metadata and then the domain name. And using, you know, whatever after the plus sign is what I can just stick in there to say I want it to go to this particular chat window. I want it's coming from this particular user, et cetera.
Right.
So, yeah, it works. It really works well. What I'd love to see is if you could do the sending of the SMS message via like a more normal gateway, because that seems to be a lot more dependable. But somehow put in there like the reply address is the special email address that I want. Then you'd kind of have the best of both worlds. But I have no idea if you can do that or not yet. Haven't made it that far.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a neat world. I mean, so the people that I've talked to are all like, God, the potential of the on-the-fly and on-the-road communication that is there with SMS is just – there's just so many neat things you can do with it.
Well, particularly, yeah. I mean, particularly outside of the U.S. I mean, in like, I went to the NetSquared conference and was talking to a lot of people about sort of communications in Africa. And they were saying that cell phones are very prevalent, and the people that have them are doing a whole lot of SMS stuff. And it's sort of a very low common denominator, kind of great way for, getting this type of communication. I mean, this talk yep. about like bringing the web in there and trying to get, but there already is this SMS culture, and, it's
right.
cool to think that you could actually start to sort of tap into that, as an adjunct to web stuff.
Yep. And that's the term lowest common denominator is one I've actually heard before. I remember talking to Chris Johnson when we were in Barcelona, and he was talking about that and how the company he's working for is looking at communication systems where they're wanting, like, that's what they want to have, that kind of lowest common denominator. Like, this system will work no matter what kind of technological, like, low point you're at.
Right.
You can still get the message through,
Right.
And I think, like you're saying, there's so many people that have cell phones. I've heard statistics before. Do you happen to know? Do you recall? I know there's X million, computers, this many million computers in the world, but there's this many million cell phones, and it's like way more. There's just so many more cell phones out there. So as a network of communication devices, the cell phone certainly has the computer beat in numbers anyways.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's talk about some of your other Drupal work.
Sure.
You've been doing a lot of sort of core and core related work for a while now, and some infrastructural stuff. And you've done a lot of work on the sort of the dark horse module for Drupal.
Yeah.
Sort of the system that runs Drupal.org, the project module.
Yep.
That kind of sort of allows the development stuff to happen on Drupal.org,
it powers Drupal.org. I mean, it powers the development process for our developers.
Yeah.
Basically.
And yet there aren't a whole lot of people that use it off of Drupal.org. Actually, I should mention that John Resig and the jQuery team have started using Project Module over there.
Yeah, I think there's a few folks out there that are using it, but and part of the reason that more people aren't using it, and it's something that Derek and I are trying to kind of get away from, is that traditionally the project module was just a module that the people in Drupal were like, we need a system to do X, and here it is. And
right.
it was highly specialized to handle what we as a community needed. So in terms of somebody just grabbing the project module from the repository and trying to make it work on their system, there was all this kind of stuff that either they didn't need or that didn't work for the way they needed it, and it wasn't configurable because we didn't care that it was configurable. We just wanted it to work for us,
Right.
So one of the things that especially, and Derek has been doing this, Derek Wright has been doing this for a while. He had the project module torch all by himself for a bit. And he had already started doing that, which is just kind of, let's look at Project Module as more of a generally useful project management system. And if that's the case, if that's the kind of, usefulness we want to get out of it, then we're going to need to start tearing out this Drupal.org specific stuff and putting in general support systems that Drupal.org can use. So we're kind of, and it's a process, because what's happened all these years is the exact opposite of that, which is, Drupal.org needs to move from Drupal 4.6 to 4.7, and nobody maintains the project module, so a bunch of people just come in and slap on a bunch of fixes to make it work, and slapping on after slapping on. Now you have this hack upon hack of a system, and it's running, but if you touch it, it just falls apart, because it's not really well designed or designed for general use. So we're kind of in the that's why I think dark horse or the the black sheep of Drupal modules is sort of a good way to think of it, is that's because that's the way it's been treated. It's needed by everybody, but wanted by nobody or something. So it's gotten attention, but only just enough to keep it doing what we've needed. And now we're trying to give it some attention like you would give a real module that a bunch of people are using. So it's taking a little bit of time to kind of to work out the kinks and to make it more generally useful and more stable and such. But we're getting there.
Cool. So, but you're just, again, pet project. I mean, this isn't something that you're using in your...
Yeah, again, project module. Yeah, and really the thing that happened was that I I had I've been doing getting more and more heavily involved in core work, and I found myself kind of running into a wall where I didn't feel like the ideas I had weren't kind of matching up with the way the people wanted it, things to be committed into core. And instead of like just continuing to beat my head off, well, I thought, well, I really want to do something important in the Drupal community, but this just doesn't seem there's like something that's not jiving here. So I thought, well, you know, where else can I look to kind of make an important contribution to the Drupal community that's not just committing core code? And honestly, like if you, it's almost like just turn to the left and there's project module begging for help, you know. So I was like, yeah, this is a perfect idea, and it's really worked out well. I mean, outside of the frustration of dealing with code that it just hasn't been very well maintained over the long haul, it's been a lot of, you know, there's those frustrations, but outside of that, it's been a lot of fun. And I feel like I'm able to provide that kind of important contribution that I was looking for to give back to the Drupal community. So I look at it like this is sort of my project that I do because I love the Drupal community so much and I want to make it better. You know, I don't get anything out of it personally, or I don't use it personally. I do get stuff out of it. I don't use the module personally. That's a better way
right,
to say it.
Right. So, we had Derek Wright on the podcast, I don't know, was it 6 months ago? I feel like maybe a little bit more than that with the new release system for Drupal and stuff. How has the project system changed and sort of what's on the horizon?
Yeah.
For it.
Yeah,
and everyone wants to know, will people be able to rate modules?
Oh boy, that's a good question. this would be a great time for me to practice my political sidestepping, you know?
Well, I can actually answer part of that, which is that's actually not a project module issue. I mean, that's a Drupal infrastructural issue. And I know that there's been some talk about those types of things. But ultimately it's sort of up to the,
And there will be some work on the Drupal module on the project module that will be necessary to make that happen. But yeah, I think it's not a project module specific thing, and which actually ties into one of the things that we've been trying to do with the project module, which is it was all custom code, and which, say, for example, like when you post an issue, like I maintain the login toboggan module and somebody finds a bug and they file an issue, right? Well, all that code where somebody files an issue and then somebody makes a follow-up and people are attaching files and such, that was all completely custom code. And you're looking at that going, Drupal has a node system and they have comments and there's an upload module that handles file attachments. Like, why in the heck aren't we using this stuff that's already there, rolling all our own giant system on top of this? So that's one of the big things that I've been working on specifically is getting all those follow-ups on an initial issue post are now going to be comments. And that actually should be, I actually posted to the front page of Drupal.org was a day or two ago, that upgrade is going to be happening on November 2nd. So as of November 2nd, we're going to have that conversion done. And so all the issue follow-ups will be comments.
Wow.
All of the file uploads are going to be handled by upload module, by comment upload module. So that's going to open up a number of neat things. Like where if you say I'm sure you've had this happen where you type up your reply to an issue and you hit submit and you're like, oh crap, I misspelled a word or I forgot to mention X or whatever. And now you're going to be able to go in and actually edit that.
Oh,
and
very
make those
cool
corrections. Yeah, or if you forgot to attach a file, you can open up the edit and attach the file.
You see that all the time, where people say, forgot the file.
And oops, the file, yeah. So how many times have you seen that in an issue queue? That's
right.
So true. So those kind of things are really going to be, I think, a nice little addition. And it's a double bonus because we as project maintainers have less code to maintain,
right,
and people who are using it get a better system. So it's a total win-win situation. So that's one of the big things that's coming along. We also, and none of this stuff is on Drupal.org yet, but should hit on Friday, as I said. We also spent some time reworking the formatting of the issue follow-up emails. I don't know if, you know, when you get one, sometimes there's just this big long string of follow-up after follow-up, and it can be kind of hard to get your bearings when you're inside that big long thread. So, that's been cleaned up a little bit. So we're hoping that's going to be something people like. What else really? I mean, those are the major things that are going to be landing, on Friday. And then there's a couple other things that are definitely going to go into the Drupal 6 version and may actually squeeze into the Drupal 5 version if we have enough time. And one of the, probably the biggest one, the most exciting one to Derek and I is the Views integration, where we're actually going to use the Views module to make Project Module do its, like, its, you know, listing displays and such, instead of, again, that's all custom code that was all written just for the Project Module, and here we have Views, this incredible module that will do all that for you. So we're going to be tearing out all that project specific code and leveraging the Views module to do that, and hopefully that'll happen in Drupal 5, and if not, it'll definitely happen in Drupal 6.
Wow. Which means that then Views will be running on Drupal.org.
It's true. We
which I don't think it is now. Is that correct?
We managed to get... No, it's not. So we kind of managed to get... We just slid that right in the side door there, you know? Like, hey, we really need Views for Project Module. You know? And there it is. So, I mean, to me, that's exciting too, because I think Views is a great module, and I'm sure there's going to be other ways we're going to be able to leverage that on Drupal.org to do some really nice stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So,
it really ought to become part of core these days.
Right.
I mean, perhaps a topic for another podcast, but
that's true,
I mean, these days, you know, you download core, you download CCK, you download Views, and then you install it.
Uh-huh.
And then you can start working with Drupal. But
has anybody done an install profile that does that for you? Because it seems like, you know, you would almost call that like standard install profile, you know, and it would include CCK.
So there's a thing. There's been talk. So does Project Module handle all the packaging?
It does.
And
it's one of its jobs.
Sort of the nightly builds and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. There's been talk about eventually having the profiles, install profiles actually sort of become distributions so that you can kind of download all of the modules that it references and Drupal core all at once.
I believe, and this is Project Module is just a big effort, and so Derek and I have almost just naturally kind of gravitated to our own little areas of what we're kind of concentrating on. Like, I was handling Project Issue Module, which was doing a lot more of the issue tracker stuff, and he's kind of been more towards like handling the packaging system and the release stuff and anything having to do with CVS integration. So he's actually the better person to ask about that. I haven't had too much involvement in it, but as I understand it, the way they want to do it is an install profile. It'll go and read the install profile, and then it'll actually package all of the modules into the zip file, basically.
Right.
So it's all there, and then you download it, unzip it, and bang, you've got your thing ready to go, basically.
That's
how I think it's going to work.
That would be really cool.
Which would be really cool, and I think that work is going forward, but as I said, I'm not really involved with it, so I can't speak to it too much more.
Right, because currently I think that the general public doesn't sort of understand the install profile concept, and for them to go and download a single install profile by itself doesn't really do much for them without doing a whole lot of documentation reading ahead of time. And let's be honest, by the time they finish reading the documentation, they've probably already finished installing Drupal.
You're probably right.
So,
and at this point, what you get, as I remember, is if you forget to put a module in, you just get a nice little error message that says, hey, this module is required for this profile.
Yeah.
As so, okay, I got to go and get it. You know. So, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things like, well, from reading the install profile, a computer could do that and know exactly what you need. So why are the humans doing it? You know, it's one of those things where the packaging system could certainly take care of that. So hopefully that'll happen in the near future. I don't have a bead on that one.
Cool. Is there other stuff on the horizon that you know
there
of
is.
Around
this? Yeah, there's one really cool thing that I actually spent a lot of time working out, which is that, and some folks who have spent some time in the issue queue may have seen the testbed bot appearing here and there in issues, which is another sort of development effort that's going on to provide automated patch testing for Drupal core patches. So basically the idea is that a patch will get posted in the issue queue, and the testing system will grab that patch. It'll install a whole version of Drupal, apply the patch, make sure that it applies, run coder module on it to make sure that the coding style is good, et cetera, and then send the results back to the issue queue to say, hey, this patch passed, or oops, this patch failed, and here's why. So what we've been working on between the folks that are working with that system and me with the project system is getting that into a little bit more integration, where instead of it just posting follow up after follow up saying how the patch file is doing, it actually will integrate those test results right into the actual follow up that that the patch was posted in. And then if it needs to test the patch again and update it, it can just update what it already posted. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Basically, the testing will be built right into the issue queue related to the follow-ups that the actual patches are in. Very clean implementation.
That's very cool. I hope we've explained it well enough for less advanced developers out there. Let's see. So basically, anyone can create a patch for Drupal now. Which is a little file that has the changes that you would like to see in Drupal, and they can submit those as an issue to core Drupal. This is now, right?
At this point, I think in the near future they're wanting to bring the contribution stuff into, but for right now it's just core. Yeah,
right.
4.7, 5, and 6, I believe it'll run the tests on.
And this will automatically take and create a whole new Drupal install.
Like it really does. Yep,
fresh whole thing.
It literally does that and apply every single patch. Yep, I was asking about that actually to the test guys, and I'm like, God, that seems like so much work to do for like, say you have like a patch that's fixing a comment typo or whatever, you know, and I'm thinking, God, that seems like so much work. But their answer, which I think is a really good one, is, well, you know, you can have a patch that might screw up the actual installation of Drupal, or you can have a patch, you know, that'll do all. There's all along the installation of Drupal, that whole process, a patch could wreck any portion of that. So right. If you really want a comprehensive testing system, you have to take that patch and run it through the entire installation procedure.
Right.
So that's what the automated system does. It literally downloads a new copy from CVS and applies the patch and starts the installer and goes through and installs Drupal and stuff like that, and it's going to happen. My understanding is that's going to happen for every single patch.
We're harnessing the power of robots for Drupal development.
It's true, yeah.
Eventually, we'll just be able to sit back and they'll code it for us.
Or at least they'll tell us when we screw up our coding. I mean, it's serious. Think about what a time saver that is. You know, there's probably thousands of patches every month that come in to Drupal, and if something can come along and say, "Hey, the coding style is not right," or "Oh my God, the patch doesn't even apply anymore," you've just saved a top-notch developer time from having to go to the issue queue, open the patch, look at it, try to apply it. You know, there's all those steps that can be automated. Now, obviously, it can't. You know, it's not going to be able to do things like tell you if the code is well thought out, but it can certainly handle a lot of the more basic stuff that right now we're having humans handle that I don't think is really necessary if we've got a good automated system. So I think it's going to be a huge time saver, and also a really big quality control thing, because even if you're a person reviewing a patch, even if you're really good and you've been involved with Drupal a long time, you can still miss a coding style thing, or you can still miss something that would mean that the patch wouldn't apply correctly or something. So this is going to help to really tighten that up, I think.
Sure, right.
Yeah, so I think it's pretty exciting. I'm looking forward to having that on Drupal.org.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess, and it can give more useful, specific, you know, what coding style is wrong with this.
Exactly.
And stuff like that. Because I've definitely had that where I've submitted a patch and then someone just responds and says, "Coding style." And I'm looking at it going, what did I do?
Did you miss a period in a comment or something?
Probably I, you know, forgot a space after an if or something like that. Or
right.
Forgot a space after something along those lines. We all have our coding bad habits, and that's mine. cool. Well, yeah. Any other projects that you're working on, Drupal modules and bits and pieces that you want to talk about?
That's really the major stuff. Outside of that, I think we'd just be reminiscing about the modules that you and I wrote together, which I think were pretty cool.
Login Toboggan lives.
Login Toboggan lives. People love that module. I still have people, like I was at a Denver Drupal meetup relatively recently, and I mentioned that I did work on that, and one of the guys, you know, was like, "Oh my God, I love that module! I install it on every single site I set up. You know, it's just the greatest. Thank you," which always makes me feel good. You know, I'm sure you feel the same way. Like when you really get that kind of feedback of somebody's used what you've done and it's made a big difference for them, it's a really nice sense you feel like, you know, your stuff matters in the world, I guess.
Which is
a really good.
No, yeah. Totally. Yeah, it's weird to bump into people and have them start talking about, oh, especially when they don't know it's my module, and they start talking about like, "Oh, I've been using Contemplate for this and that," and it's, you know, usually they'll complain about it.
And, and you go, yes, I wrote that.
That's my module. Sorry. Actually, I mean, I was going to say that I think the coolest thing about that module for me, in addition to the fact that, yeah, it allows me to do some things that I would prefer, like allowing people to log in with their email address, but some of it got into Core. I mean, essentially
it did. The immediate login stuff got in. Yeah. Although I really wanted it to come with the validation stuff, because it seems like those are like hand in glove, but it didn't quite make it. Hopefully in the near future, you know,
yeah,
we'd be able to do that, because it's nice for, you know, it's convenient for somebody to be able to just create their password, but it's a bit of a, like, if you're just using Core, it's a kind of a trade-off to say, okay, I'm going to be able to give this new user this convenience, but I've just really opened up the world to spam bots. Yeah. You can come and register on my site, and now they're an authenticated user. And if the validation system that we had put into Login Toboggan was in there, you would have the best of both worlds. Right. So I'm hoping at some point in the near future, I feel like there's probably half of the features in that module I would, if I was a Core committer, my little fantasy, you know, those would be going to Core, because I think that they're just really smart implementations of login procedures, basically.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
Cool.
But that's why people write modules, right? They go, this should be in Core, but it's not, and I'm going to write my own module for it. I mean, that probably happens half the time. People are walking around thinking that their stuff should be in there.
The nice thing is that they can.
Right, and it's so true. Like
the power of Drupal is the, and part of, you know, it's a sword that cuts both ways. You know, there's what, like 2,000 Drupal modules just for Drupal 5 right now, but pretty close to that. Yeah.
I the last time I checked, I thought it was more in the order of 400. I'm obviously out of the loop.
Well, yeah. I mean, the trick, if you've got CVS, if CVS means anything to you, if you know how to do it, then you can check out the Drupal 5 branch and just look in the modules directory. And I think that there's.
There's a question I wanted to ask it's kind of related to that, which is that sort of speaks to the dramatic growth of Drupal. There's so many different ways, you know, that you can measure that. One of the ways that I found really interesting is that the very first Drupal conference, I hear numbers reported anywhere from 20 to 40 people, you know, and that was it meant somebody's basement or something, you know. And now we're like taking over a convention center. I think at Barcelona, which was the last conference not that long ago, we had, was it 435 people? Was that how many? It was right around that number.
That was what I heard. Basically, we've been doubling with each conference.
Right. Exactly. And a lot of
it was sort of hard to tell with Yahoo Sunnyvale, because they had a relatively limited amount of space, and the conference sold out so quickly, and we spent a whole lot of time telling people don't come. so it was sort of hard to gauge it there. But basically,
there were more than just Drupal people there too, right? Weren't the Vancouver conference and that one both were sort of like anybody who has an open source CMS conference.
Yeah, it was an open source CMS conference, but it was mostly Drupal people, and so it was just, we're not going to be doing that anymore. It's just Drupal conferences from here on out. So,
and there's a number of ways you can measure that, like the number of contributed modules is one, the traffic on Drupal.org, the number of posts on Drupal.org. It almost seems like any metric you look at, it's about doubling every year is what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
And the question I had for you, I'm just kind of curious what you think, is if you're looking out into the future, what do you think about that growth? Do you see that as something that's going to go on for X number of years, or do you think it's going to start to slow down and kind of stabilize, or where do you see Drupal in its growth cycle, I guess might be the question.
Well, the whole thing about exponential growth is it's continuously shocking. I mean, you know, for anything to double over any given period of time is shocking. And Dries and I were both invited to the Foo Camp, the O'Reilly Foo Camp, which was a few months ago. Just walking around there and talking about Drupal to big name people. I mean, you know, like heads of industry. And they'd say, oh, Drupal, yeah, I've been meaning to learn more about that. Or, oh, yeah, sure, I'm familiar with that, you know. And I mean, for me, I've been very, you know, I been a bit of an evangelist, if not just simply doing a podcast,
right.
And, you know, but for Dries in particular, who was there when there was, you know, one person working on it, it's a fascinating thing, but I don't know. I mean, exponential growth can only continue so long. I mean, I don't know. It's good. It's really fascinating, and we're continuously shocked by the companies that we talk to that are wanting to use Drupal and have heard good things about it and stuff like that. So I don't know. It's
I kind of feel like you and I came in at a kind of a nice time because we were still kind of in the 4.6 era. It was still, you know, kind of in the hobby phase, not really a hobby, but I mean, it hadn't transcended to where it is now, where it's just crazy. So we kind of got to experience that, and now we're still here for this major transformation where it's becoming more of the kind of thing that big companies are even becoming interested in. So
yeah.
We got to see that transformation, like a really important segment of that transportation we were there for, you know.
Yeah. And I think also the growth will affect the code a little bit as well, there becomes more incentive for something like a redesign of Drupal.org, where it's really not a hobby thing anymore.
Right, exactly.
And you know, a little bit of polish and more polish would be helpful. Sort of a focus towards not marketing, but just sort of making it easier, easier barrier of entry. Sort of acknowledging, people's needs as they're coming to this, just being told use Drupal. And then,
I feel like that the community has done a really good job of handling the growing pains that I've seen come up as we've continued to these different kinds of transformations. You know, you see little tensions come up, and you know, there's some conflict about, you know, certain people want it to be the way it used to be, and other people are like, no, it has to change. But it seems that overall that there's a, you know, that the community is willing to move in the direction of change and is making adjustments to the new realities. I think it's been really good. You know,
yeah.
I'm encouraged by it, I guess I would say.
Yeah. I mean, there's always growing pains. I mean, it's difficult to go to a conference like the one in Barcelona. And there were so many people there who I saw and meant to talk to, but just the vast number of people, made it really difficult to connect in that same way. So that sort of loss of that sort of intimacy of a smaller group is a little bit difficult, but by the same token, seeing people come in and doing, you know, more people coming in and doing more amazing things, like this asterisk stuff, which, I'm sure there's going to be people who are listening to the podcast who are going to contact you and want to do more great, amazing things with asterisk and make it better.
hopefully they'll stick around this time. So we should probably put, if I can, we'll post the link to my demo site on the show notes, and people can check it out there. And if they want to shoot me an email or whatever to check out the module or talk to me about helping me develop it or whatever, that would be great.
Sure. Let's just verbally tell people the.
I have to spell the domain.
Do you?
No, I can. Oh, I can. I mean, we can go for it, but
sure.
Yeah,
okay, so, everyone, okay, get your pencils and paper ready.
So yeah. It's the words are asterisk.drupal.xcarnated.com, and the third word is xcarnated, which is xcarnated. That's my little play domain that I keep for things like this.
Cool.
So we should post it on the show notes so people can have that as a link. And there's a couple other guests, and we're probably cruising towards the end here. And before we get there, I need to do my my standard, I'll just call it begging for help, basically, which is that if anybody has any interest or time and wants to contribute to what I think is the most important contributed module in Drupal, which is the project module, please contact Derek or I. and get yourself involved. It's certainly, you know, even if you don't have, even if you have no coding experience at all, we need documentation writers. I mean, there's all kinds of ways that people can pitch in, and if you come and work with us, you can feel good about the fact that you're contributing to something that everybody's going to benefit from. So,
oh, yeah.
Please, you know, anybody who has any level of interest in that at all, you know, please look us up in Pound Drupal, or, you know, shoot somebody an email or whatever, and get involved, because your efforts will make a difference to a lot of people in the Drupal community.
Yeah, I mean, talk about make a name for yourself in Drupal.
Yeah. It is. It's the fast track.
Yeah, exactly. And Derek Wright is DWW on Drupal.org.
Yep.
And you, Chad Phillips, are C. Phillip. No.
Oh, I'm not.
You
no.
are. Are you? What is it? It changes every so often.
it changed once in the beginning, but because it was so long, people kept complaining that they wanted me to have a shorter nickname, so I changed it to Hunmonk, which is Hunmonk. So okay. That's if you want to look for me in Drupal, you can find me there. I'm there all the time.
Hunmonk. Okay. Hunmonk. Let's let's take a moment to explain your screen name.
Sure.
It's sometimes Hunmonk Group, the Hunmonk Group.
Right.
What is the Hunmonk Group?
Oh, that was a failed business thing. That was the only thing good about it was the name, so I decided to keep that. But the important part is the part that's the shortened version of it anyways, which is Hunmonk, which stands – it's just a little contraction, I guess you would say, for the 100th monkey syndrome, which is just a fun little – I guess you almost would call it an urban legend. And you can – anybody who's interested can look – they can just type in Hunmonk syndrome on – or 100th monkey syndrome in Google, and you'll find all kinds of stuff that talks about that. So it's a pretty neat little story.
Cool. So Hunmonk, short for 100th
monkey syndrome. Yep. Yep. I actually have – and I've thought about this more than once, that it would – I'm not the only person in Drupal that has a nickname that I'm like, where did that come from? You know, I think all, even people with short nicknames, like Charlie with a CHX, I'm like, well, where did he get that? You know, where did that come from? I've wanted to post a page on Drupal.org for a long time that's just basically like an open, you know, book page, whatever, that people can go in and say, you know, here's my nickname and here's how I figured it out. Just, I always thought that would be kind of interesting to learn more about that. You know, because there's a story behind all kinds of them, you know.
Oh, yeah.
As many have a story.
Yeah.
You even have one, don't you?
Jeff with two J's. J Jeff. I got the domain name, although it's a terribly atrophied blog up there now, but jjeff.com. Yeah, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to keep the personal branding as consistent as possible. So. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, thanks, Chad. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I think there was a lot of really great information we got out there. So
this has been a lot of fun. I actually have had a really good time.
Cool. And we'll see you at the next DrupalCon, wherever it is, as long That's as good. You can get enough freelance Drupal work to pay your flight. So
send everyone, contributions to
exactly. Everyone, when you're looking for a freelance developer and there's a DrupalCon on the horizon, Chad Phillips is available.
I'll be there.
Cool. Well, take care, Chad.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.